Hello there, and welcome to In Your Own Kin. I'm your host, Charlotte. I'm a lover of great food, sometimes artist, sleep-in advocate, storyteller, mama, and postpartum professional in Naarm, Melbourne. Each week, I'll be chatting to families about their journey into parenthood, the grandest of adventures. Parenting is beautiful, messy, sparkly, hard work. You were never meant to do this alone. It's time to get comfy in your own kin. In Your Own Kin acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land where you are listening to today's episode. I pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize that the telling of stories has happened here since time immemorial. In Your Own Kin is recorded by the Birrarung on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Sovereignty of these lands has not and is not ceded, and it remains stolen. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land. In this week's episode, Katrina shares her parenthood journey and reflects on adventures with her husband Brendan and their children Reggie and Millie. It was such a delight to hear Kat's story. Kat speaks with so much warmth and generosity about the joys and challenges of parenthood. I know that, like me, you will be nodding along as she speaks about experiencing mum guilt and mum rage. I loved this chat. It is bursting with love and reassurance and serves as a timely reminder that we all need in this season and throughout all of the many seasons of parenthood. Kat talks about the journey to conceiving Reggie, her two different births, her mental health, asking for help, and her two very different postpartum experiences. From my family to yours, I wish you a very magical festive season. Go gently. You're amazing. Here's Kat. Katrina, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. It's an absolute pleasure to have been able to have a chat with you already this morning.
Thank you for having me. It's an absolute pleasure from my end.
Katrina, would you like to let the listeners know a little bit about you, who's in your family and where you're living at the moment?
Yep. So I live in inner West Melbourne at the moment with my husband, Brendan, and my two kidlets, Reggie, who's four, and Millie, who's two. And we've been in this spot for about 5 years now. So just before we welcomed Reggie into the world. So I'm originally from the UK. I came out to Australia in 2006 for a year. I was a backpacker and got down to Melbourne. And I actually knew Brendan already from overseas. We'd worked at a summer camp in America together.
Oh, amazing.
So when I came to Melbourne with my friend, we touched base with Brendan as like, hey, you know, do you want to hang out? And and then I ended up getting sponsored through work here. So stayed and Brendan and I got together. And I never left.
And what makes your heart sing, Katrina? What are the things you love doing?
Oh, so many things. Obviously, my family, my extended family, so my family back at home, and then my beautiful in-laws. I could not be more fortunate with my in-laws, and there is a number of them. So been so lucky with that, and just the friendships that I have both here and again at home all across the world. But I love, you know, my things are cooking, and I love swimming when I can, when the pools are open, chats and food and drink and all of that jazz.
All the good stuff.
Yeah.
Talk to me about life, pre-parenthood. Talk to me about life when it was you and Brendan.
Yeah, we had a great life. Because obviously I'm from the UK, we travelled quite a lot, both over to the UK, but we always tacked on other adventures as well. So we were really fortunate to do that at least probably once a year. Brendan's self-employed and my work was always really flexible, understanding that, you know, I had families overseas that I wanted to go and see. So we travelled heaps, which was fantastic. At the time, well, pre-children, we lived in the inner north and we had best friends literally around the corner. So we just had, you know, the most fantastic network of friends up there, and we were both working full-time, working hard, which was great. But it then became, after we got married and we had a fantastic 6 week long honeymoon and doing various adventures, and we thought about starting to try a family, it's when the work kind of became a bit of a problem, because I was working a corporate, fairly corporate job, very high stress. and very long hours. So it started to, that we never went to see a doctor or facility specialist or anything, but it mm-hmm. started to become obvious that something wasn't quite working.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a stress that neither of us could put up with really for very much longer. So
yeah.
I ended up changing jobs. Yeah, so we could basically, so we could start a family. All in all, it probably took about 15 months to fall pregnant with Reggie. And a lot of that was to do with stress. So I knew that if I had a new job and I had, you know, looked after myself a bit better, I as do a lot of people, find that the more exercise I can fit in, the better mentally I feel. And so with the other job, I didn't have the time in the day. I was working, you know, 10, 11, 12 hour days. So I didn't have the time to then come and have that release so I would feel calmer and be able to handle the rest of the world better.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So once I changed jobs, I then changed lifestyle to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Allowed more space for different things. We bought a house in that time. So we had our space. So I think then we could kind of put down proper root. We felt more secure for our future.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then actually after we moved in, I think it was about a month that we then fell pregnant. So I think maybe mentally and physically, I was finally ready, like myself. I was like, yes. And relax.
Yeah.
Ooh, sorted now. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's fascinating how stress plays out, right? Like we are so caught up in this like do more world, but it really does have such a big impact on our health, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And physically, I always feel stressed physically as well as mentally, you know, tightness in my neck and shoulders. And that's been going on for years and years and years. But yeah, just how it affects everything.
Absolutely. Did you have a village holding you in that 15 months?
Yes, I did. Yeah, my in-laws are brilliant. So in terms of family, I never felt, there's times that I would have loved to have my immediate family here. My in-laws I'm so close with, and geographically I'm really close to quite a few of them. So that really helped. And friendship-wise, I've just got the most supportive group of friends here as well. My problem was and is, I am terrible at asking for and accepting help. So
yes,
even to this day, my girlfriends are like, if you need me, just give me a call. And I'll sit there with the phone in my hands thinking, call her, just call her. She said you can call, just call her.
Yeah.
And 9.9 times out of 10, I won't. So I will struggle on by myself. I'm getting better. Yeah, it's taken me 40 years to get better at asking for help.
It's such a muscle that we have to flex though, isn't it? Like I'm exactly the same. I will definitely like push myself to the limit. I'm much better at like telling people like it's good to ask for help. But the reality is like, yeah, gosh, it takes practice. Like we need to practice asking for help.
Yeah. And it needs to be more accepted to ask for help as well. I feel like societies in general, especially kind of my generation, was, you know, to be busy and to, you know, manage everything by yourself is so glorified.
Totally.
And it becomes unsustainable. And the fact that our culture, you know, in Western cultures, the way of life seems to have been, have a baby and then, you know, it's a race to recovery.
Yes.
Whereas a lot of what postpartum is about, from our point of view, the new outlook on postpartum is no, there's no race. You need this space and this time to regroup and rest and recuperate and learn. Whereas even 4 years ago, I honestly felt like, nope, you have to race to get back into society and race to get back into those genes and whatever else it was.
Yeah, there's definitely been a shift, hasn't there? But my gosh, we've still got a ways to go, don't we?
Yeah. I definitely think there's been a shift and it's absolutely brilliant because now when I look back, it does make me sad. Or even now I speak to some people and it makes me a bit sad that they feel this need to rush that part of their lives. I mean, it's brilliant to have that start for your baby as well, but also you need it for yourself.
Mm.
And yeah, it's great that it's becoming more common and more okay to accept that space and take the time.
Absolutely. Talk to me about finding out that you were pregnant. What was that moment like?
Yeah, so after probably 15 months of taking pregnancy tests, but every time I did take one, I kind of knew what the outcome would be. That last pregnancy test before Reggie, I was nervous. I woke up in the morning. My partner's always, he's a tradie, so he's always out of the house most of the time before I'm even out of bed. So I got up in the morning knowing that he was gone, so I had the mental space to just do it and then acknowledge whatever the outcome would be. And it was the first test that I was nervous about. And yeah, so I got those blue lines came up. And as I was staring at the pregnancy test in the toilet, I heard the back door open. Brendan had come, he'd forgotten something or he had to come pick something up. I can't remember now. I walked out and he looked at my face and bless him, he thought something terrible had happened. He was like, who is it? Or what's wrong? And I said, no, nothing's wrong. And I said, I couldn't find the words to tell him. Which is so ridiculous because we've been trying. But I think it was just after such a long time of nothing happening, we were pregnant. And he was just ecstatic immediately, which was lovely. And then we kind of just stood there staring at each other awkwardly. because we then had to both go to work. And yeah, so it went off. And then, you know, that night we were just giggling. It was like this amazing secret that we had. So it was great.
Oh my God, so magic. It gives me prickly eyes. I think it's so wild. Like you get that result and everything kind of changes, but nothing changes. You've just then got to go on with the rest of your day. Like you're not harboring this amazing everyday miracle, right?
Oh, absolutely. I went to work and people were still expecting me to call clients and, you know, finish projects and that kind of thing. And I was like, it's a different day. It's a special day. I think it was that weekend we ended up, we've got a really close group of friends over in South Australia and we were flying over, I think it was somebody's birthday. One of my friends, we've known each other for nearly 20 years and we're having this big meal and she just looked at me and I said, I'm just going to go to the toilet. So she followed me to the bathroom. Nothing. I'd had like half a glass of champagne and she just came to me in the bathroom and she went, you are pregnant. How did you even know that? I could not believe it. And she said, I knew as soon as I saw you. I was like, what? So I would have been a week pregnant at that stage.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So amazing. And how are you feeling emotionally at that point? It had been a long journey to coming to Reggie and you touched on feeling really emotionally challenged by that time. How are you feeling emotionally in those first few weeks of pregnancy?
Honestly, I remember feeling really good. We told people fairly early. We told people at about 8 weeks. Having that secret between Brendan and I and holding that quite close and I physically felt quite well as well. So I was really fortunate that I didn't have terrible pregnancy sickness. You know, I had nausea that would go away as soon as I ate something. So I was really lucky. So yeah, so emotionally during pregnancy, I would say 90% of the time I felt really good. I felt really capable and really excited. Yeah, had my moments, obviously. But,
yeah, absolutely. And were you thinking about the birth date? How were you preparing for birth? Were you preparing for birth?
Yep. My outlook on the birth was I wanted to go in the most natural way possible. So try not to have too much intervention. I knew that I wanted to birth in a hospital, which is a bit like an oxymoron. But if anything were to happen, I just wanted to have all of the medical staff and everything that was needed was there.
Yeah.
But in saying that, I was doing lots of yoga. We did a hypnobirthing course. We went and did a tour of the hospital because neither of us had been into the hospital before. So went and did that. So we knew where to park and we knew, you know, what floor we needed to be on and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that was all fine. And then at 30 weeks, we got told that the baby was in a breech position, but not to worry because they'll probably move and it will be fine. And so every time I went, I'm like, nah, still breech. So at 37 weeks, they booked me in to see whether they could turn the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I was so sure that the baby would turn. Absolute 100%. I knew that baby was going to turn. And then they went in and he kept going around the right way and then pinging back. So they said, oh, you know, sorry, that's not going to work. So we're going to have to, the hospital that I was at, they couldn't facilitate a vaginal breech birth. So they said, oh, that was at 37 weeks. Sorry, we're going to have to put you on cesarean. And I said, well, can't you try and move him again next week? Mm. And so I was using my hypnobirthing techniques, and unbeknownst to me, the guy who was the head of the birthing suite just looked at me crazily. And he said the next week, he was like, nobody's ever asked me to do that again. So at that point, I still thought that Reggie would turn.
Yeah.
So I was doing acupuncture. I was lying on an ironing board with my feet up in the air. I was doing all this stuff, and he was a little stubborn baby and not move. So at 38 weeks, they booked me in for a cesarean the following week. And that was actually probably the beginning of the mental toughness of it all for me. Because I was so fit and so healthy and had the most perfect pregnancy that I was like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I birth my baby? Which, you know, had I been at a different hospital, I would have been allowed to potentially try a vaginal bridge birth. So that took a couple of days to kind of get my head around.
Yeah.
And I was still working. I stupidly decided to work an extra week. So I had 5 days maternity leave.
It's so hard. But like so many of us do that, don't we? Because they're like, we've got to save it up for when the baby's here. It's really hard.
Yeah. And because I felt so fine, I was like, well, why would I want to go and sit home and rest? Now, every pregnant mother, I'm like, make sure you have at least 2 weeks.
Totally rest.
Yeah.
And it was feeling tricky emotionally at that point. Talk to me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So as I said, I was really physically fit and healthy. So, and I'd had the most perfect pregnancy. It was ridiculous. So I, in my head, it was like, there must be something I can do, or it's something that I've done. Why I can't birth the way that I thought I would be able to do it. I guess there was that, but because of the excitement of the arrival of the baby as well, I really did try and push that to one side. I didn't address that feeling of failure at that point at all. And it wasn't a failure. And had I spoken to anybody about it, they would have said it wasn't a failure. It's just the way things are. And you know, and because of the way our birthing practices are in Australia, you know, breech vaginal births aren't that common, which I have heard is changing. Yeah, so going into the birth, it was really exciting, but in the back of my mind, I always had, this isn't the way it should be. And also, I think I was still in denial, because even on the morning we went in for the cesarean, they check it, they do another ultrasound just to double check that the baby hasn't turned. And even at that point, I was like, they're going to do this ultrasound and he'll be head down. And so even on that day, they did it. And when they first put the probe on my tummy, they were like, oh, I think he has turned.
No. You have one job.
They're like, no, sorry. But I think because at that point, Brendan and I was quite giddy with excitement, it didn't matter quite so much. But I was still convinced that they would check it and he'd have turned.
Yeah.
But he was not turning.
He was happy. He was right where he needed.
Yeah.
And were you preparing in any way for postpartum?
Not at all.
Yeah.
I was. With the exception of setting up a bassinet and a changing table and obviously getting the clothes and that kind of thing. That was the extent. I love to cook and I'm a feeder. I do not remember even pre-preparing any food from when we got back from the hospital. I think we had an empty freezer. I think we probably had an empty fridge, which now baffles me. I'm like, I'm the person that turns up, you know, to new parents' house with like basketfuls of food, and yet I didn't do it for myself. And we knew I was having a cesarean, and we still didn't do anything. So it's baffling now to me. The beauty of hindsight.
Totally right. It's what we would do now. It's so hard though. Like, we don't talk enough about that. I think in the giddy excitement, you kind of get swept up in it and spend so much time talking about a birthday and then not necessarily about that time afterwards and how you can feel really supported.
Yeah, exactly. In saying that, I was in hospital for 3 days. and got home, and there was welcome flowers and a welcome banner, and my brother and sister-in-law had stocked our fridge, so they knew.
Perfection. Oh my gosh, it's like the perfect village. That's what you want.
Yeah, gorgeous.
Talk to me about the birthday.
Yeah, so it was all, there was no surprises for us. So we were booked in to get to the hospital for 7 a.m. So, you know, I had to fast from midnight the night before, which was tricky because as soon as I woke up in the morning, I would be like, right, I need to eat.
Ravenous.
So I had like three meals the night before, which I know they tell me not to do, but I was like, I know my own body.
Totally. I'm the boss of my own body, actually.
Yeah. And I think I remember sleeping okay. I mean, I was still up and down going to the toilet. So because we had to be at the hospital at 7, we had a really easy drive into the hospital, found a park pretty easily, went up to where we need to be. And there was this giddy excitement. Like, as I said, I was convinced that we would get in there and then be sent home because the baby had turned. But at the same time, I was also really excited that that was the birthday that, you know, yeah, the two thoughts were in tandem together. It's really hard to explain.
Yeah.
And Brendan, we were just laughing and giggling and having fun. And you're in the prep room or whatever it is, and they come in and you have both put on your gowns, and we were laughing about that. And we were like a couple of school kids. We were just giggling and having fun. And then they obviously took me in to do the epidural for the cesarean. And the only time I felt annoyed, I just started being really good at packing the bag and making sure that there was heaps of snacks for Brendan. And while they were putting the epidural in, obviously Brendan couldn't be there, but he was looking through the tiny round window of the operating theatre, like for encouragement. Oh. And as I looked up and saw his face, and I was like, he's there, he's there.
Oh,
by which point I was starving. He just lifted up this muesli bar and did a thumbs up.
Oh, no.
No, I just remember thinking, you bastard, I'm so hungry. I was like, oh my goodness. But no, and the epidural worked really quickly and worked really well. And we had an amazing team. The anaesthetist was absolutely hilarious. We were having lots of jokes and laughs with him. We didn't know what we were having, but Brendan and I had a bet on because Brendan thought it was a girl and I thought it was a boy. So the anaesthetist was loving that. And yeah, everything, it went so smoothly and was just textbook. And within 20 minutes, we were meeting Reggie for the first time.
Tell me about those first few moments with Reggie.
Yeah, it's a bit hazy. I mean, mostly because it's 4.5 years ago, but you know, there was some drugs involved as well. But I remember them lifting him up and saying, it's a boy. And yeah, he just being this scrawny, and he was crying straight away as well. So which I think there was that flood of relief. And then they came and brought him over the curtain, popped him on me. So I got to have that skin to skin straight away, which was really great. And then they obviously took him off and weighed him, cleaned him up, did what they had to do, brought him back. And then he and Brendan went off to recovery, and they ended up having skin to skin because I said, if I can't have it for a long period after the birth, then I want you to have it. And it was actually Brendan's younger brother that had told us that their firstborn was a cesarean baby, and they'd said, you know, try and get the father to have the skin to skin. So that was brilliant.
Yeah.
And then went into recovery, and they said, let's try and get him fed straight away. And just like, look, but what do I need to do? I just hadn't done any of that. I was so unprepared in that respect. So luckily he latched really well. But I just remember looking down at him and just thinking, this is mad. Like, yes. I was a bit confused by everything, whether that was the cesarean, you know, the lack of food, whatever it was. I was just like, this is crazy. I was like, I can't believe this has happened. It was all a bit strange.
Yeah, it's such a wild feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
How are you feeling in those first few days together?
Tired. The first day that he was born, he fed and he slept really well that first day. And of course, I just stayed awake looking at him like a fool. I should have slept. I didn't.
Oh, in
love. So then the next day when I wanted to sleep, he was obviously awake all the time. Brendan was brilliant, and we were the first night, I mean, they say everybody should leave at, I think it's like 8 p.m. And we had a great, well, I was just public, but we had a great team of midwives who were just like, if we don't see you and we don't hear you, then you're not here.
Oh, I love that.
And I was in a shared room, but the person that was in there got discharged at like 5 p.m. So I actually had night to myself. So Brendan ended up staying until about 11 when the head midwife came and said, look, my boss is coming around and, you know, he's leaving out, which was brilliant.
Yeah.
The second night, we unfortunately didn't have the best midwife assigned to us. And that was really hard. And that then meant that Brendan really didn't want to leave, but he was getting made to. So that was tough. Luckily for me, and I don't know because it's all a bit vague, but I do remember, and I remember because he was a male midwife. I think maybe my midwife that had been assigned to me was on a break. And so he came through and bless him, he sat with me, I think, for about 2 or 3 hours.
Oh,
and just because Reggie wouldn't go to sleep. So we'd take Reggie off for a bit so I could get like 20 minutes sleep and then he'd bring him back in. And he was, his name was Jonathan and he was lovely. And that stayed with me because I think if he hadn't been there that night, I'd have been, because I couldn't get up, I couldn't do anything. I'd had a cesarean. So that was a toughie.
We've spoken a little bit before we started recording. So I might jump you a wee bit ahead to when things started to get a little bit more wobbly. What was that like?
They just kind of got wobbly straight away, to be honest.
Yeah.
So we got home and that was all exciting. But then as soon as we walked in, it was just like, oh my goodness, what do we do now? Like there's a baby in our house. My milk came in straight away and Reg was a really good feeder. I didn't have any issues with breastfeeding, except for he never put on any weight. So after he lost that initial weight after their birth, he just wasn't putting on any weight and he kept losing a pound here. In those first 3 weeks, we had probably 10 maternal health visits. When we first got home, I was like, he's feeding well and I'm breastfeeding, which is not what I wanted to do. But I felt quite disengaged from the whole situation. When Reg was first born and we were in the hospital, I remember looking at him and thinking, when's this like rush of maternal love? Like I loved him straight away, don't get me wrong. I thought he was the best thing on sliced bread, but I didn't feel that overwhelming rush of emotions that you get told you're going to feel. So part of me was like, what's wrong? Why aren't I feeling these things? Mm. And I waited. I was like, take a couple of days. You've had a cesarean. You need to get over it. And they didn't come. On top of that, I'm getting told that my baby's not putting on any weight. So it got to 3 weeks and the maternal health nurse said, I think we need to start topping them up with formula. And I was devastated. I was like, I couldn't birth my baby the way that I wanted to. And now I can't feed my baby the way I want to do. So I was still breastfeeding, but they were saying to top up, but also to carry on pumping. And Reggie was a slow feeder. So I would breastfeed him for an hour. I would then top him up with a bottle and I would then pump for 40 minutes, by which point there'd be like half an hour to go to the toilet, make a cup of tea, get something to eat, and then the process would start again. It was physically taxing and obviously recovering from major surgery as well.
Yeah.
So physically taxing. And then mentally, I didn't have the time or capacity to process anything. And both me and my husband are very much she'll be all right, you know, get on with it, take some breaths and you'll be fine. And so I just plodded on and kept plodding. And it wasn't, I kind of persevered with the breastfeeding. I think Reg was about 7 months and he was such a curious babe. I'd put him on the boob, but he'd want to be looking around and moving around. So I was just like, this isn't working for either of us. I was really lucky as well that he took the bottle brilliantly, but he also didn't develop an aversion to the breast either. So he was happy to feed both ways. But yeah, I just really struggled. And I had my beautiful sister-in-law who lives on the road from me. She would come, especially in those first 6 weeks, you know, come and vacuum for me because, of course, I couldn't vacuum. You know, she'd drop things off for me and make sure that there was food here and that kind of thing, which was a godsend. And then my parents arrived from the UK when Reg was about 5 weeks, I think.
Yeah.
And they were here for 4 weeks. But then, of course, that's quite tricky. I think they were staying with us. I can't even remember now. But yeah, that was quite tricky. So although I had my mum here, it was all a bit hard. Yeah. And it took me a while to, I don't know. Yeah, it took me a while.
It's such a steep learning curve, isn't it? You're learning a whole new little being, but you're also learning like a whole new version of yourself.
Yeah, it took me until Reggie was nearly three to realize that actually I had some form of postpartum depression. It didn't affect mostly my day-to-day life, but it was there and it affected my relationship with Reggie. It took me nearly 3 years to go, hang on a second, this isn't the way it should be, and to go and seek help. And when I got that help, even the first session I went to, so I sought out a counsellor who also specialises in treatments of stress and that kind of thing. And after my first session, I came home and something had clicked. And the way I looked at mine and Reggie's relationship was just different from then on. And the way I looked at myself as a mother as well.
Yeah.
Because I think that was the other thing about the feeding was that, yeah, I hadn't birthed my baby the way that I wanted to. I couldn't feed my baby the way that I wanted to. So what was I doing wrong? And it's like, I wasn't doing anything wrong.
You weren't doing anything wrong.
Yeah, but I had these preconceptions of what it should be like.
Yeah.
How totally. I should be able to manage everything. You can't manage everything. You
can't.
Something's got to give.
Yeah. And it's just like actually too much to hold alone.
Yeah. And now I know what I know about potentially seeing a lactation consultant might have helped, or, you know, being more open and honest with Brendan. Because even with Brendan, I was trying to put on this front of, you know, he's running a small business and I don't want to put more stress onto him. And if I'd have been more open and honest with him, I mean, it's all the shoulda, woulda, coulda, but how different things might have been, how easier things might have been. Yeah. Hindsight, that wondrous thing.
Hindsight, indeed. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the power of storytelling, isn't it? Because as soon as you start to speak openly and honestly about the sparkly bits of parenthood, but also the grey bits of parenthood, I think you really open the door for others to do that as well, because it's tricky. Like, there are moments that are so fucking tricky, but we don't necessarily talk about them or share them. And so when we're in that grey moment, it just feels like you're the only person that's ever felt like this way.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when I started seeing my counsellor, which was beginning of 2020, it blew my world apart in a great way, in an amazing way. Within 4 or 5 months, I felt really comfortable. I'm a bit of an oversharer anyway, but I was having a chat with somebody and she was just saying, oh, I had a really tough time with my toddler this morning, blah, blah, blah. And I said, I can't remember how it came out, but I said something about going to see this counsellor, because I got to the point with Reggie that it was the mum rage. Yes. And nobody talked about mum rage. It was at that stage probably upsetting me more than it was upsetting Reggie, bless him. He's a very resilient little boy. And I said, and I think I referred to it as the mum rage. And my friend turned around and looked at me and she was like, oh my God, that's exactly what it is. Nobody says anything. Yes. And I've had that conversation, not just about mum rage, but about seeing a counsellor or not feeling, yes, that immediate bond with your baby. I've had that conversation so many times. And the, yes, reaction every time is, oh my God, nobody ever says that. Nobody ever says that you might not feel this amazing spark with your baby straight away. Nobody says that you might really struggle after, you know, wanting to breastfeed and not being able to breastfeed. Nobody says that you find parenting so hard some days you just don't want to do it.
Yes.
You know, there's this expectation that we're going to love continuously and unconditionally, and which obviously you do love unconditionally, but some days you just don't want to be around.
Oh, heck yes.
Yeah, and I think because I am an oversharer, they realise it's okay to have those feelings. It's okay to find everything hard and not be easy, and it's okay to not love everybody in your mother's group. It's, you know,
totally, because we're only human, right? Like, that makes complete, yeah, sense.
And it's a learning curve. It's a huge learning curve.
Yeah, I think that vulnerability, and yeah, I'm an oversharer as well. I really enjoy the oversharing. I think it's important.
It's really important, especially with motherhood and early motherhood.
For the purposes of time, I might jump you a little bit again, and we'll talk about when you started to feel ready to approach the possibility of expanding on the family and what that felt like.
So it took me about a year. We talked about it and we knew that we didn't want an only child. We both have siblings and we both love being one of many siblings. So that was a given. So we had a trip over to the UK planned so my sisters could meet and their families could meet Reggie. I said, look, science feel a bit better. Let's, you know, we'll go over and then I'll come off the pill so my body can get ready to think about conceiving again. And then we'll start trying when we get back. I wasn't getting clear as on the pill. Had a bit of spotting. I was like, okay, fine. And then on the flight back from the UK, I just remember sitting there thinking, I feel pregnant. I was like, no, I can't be. And I kid you not, I came off the pill and within 2 weeks I was pregnant. So that was after taking 15 months with Reggie.
Yeah.
We got home and I got up with Reggie that first morning, jet lag, and I was, you know, pounding the streets, and we walked past a 24-hour chemist and I was like, I'll just do it so it's out of my mind. And so poor Brendan woke up after like worst jet laggy sleep. I was like, I'm so sorry. And I'm pregnant. And he was like, what?
Welcome home.
Like, did we even have sex or anything? Yeah. So that was great. The other thing that was really exciting was that my sister-in-law was also pregnant, which I knew. And so our babes are 5 weeks apart, which is just incredible. Yeah, so good.
Magic.
Yeah. And again, I had a great pregnancy and I was pretty determined that I was going to try for a VBAC. Again, I was in the public maternity system. And actually, most of the doctors that I met with were like, nah, because of your age. I was 38. So they were like, because of your age and your history with the cesarean, we'd probably advise you for another cesarean, which I was like, whatever. And then I was probably about 30 weeks ish and I met with the doctor and he was fairly young and he just said there's no reason. He was like, the only reason is that your scar might tear, and he was like, but you'll know about that straight away, and there's no reason to say that it will, and there's no reason to say that it won't. If it does, that just means that we get you straight into the operating theatre. If it doesn't, then you can have a VBAC.
Oh.
So we ended up, we're really lucky. Yeah, had a great pregnancy and ended up having a VBAC with Millie.
Talk to me about the first few moments with Millie.
Yeah, so really different. I had to be induced, which worked, but it worked extremely, extremely well with the contractions. Anyway, so I ended up having an epidural, which again worked brilliantly on me. So I didn't have any pain even when pushing. And she arrived and she was a, Reg was this little scrawny thing and Millie was massive and just yelly and aggressive. And we had our skin to skin and then they cleaned her up and she fed for about 2 hours. She was just going for it and going for it and going for it. And those moments were so different. I felt the bond almost straight away. I felt that gush of love. I felt Brendan, I was like, go home, be with Reggie. I was confident. I was happy. Like I didn't feel nervous about Brendan going home. Whereas with Reggie, I was always like, don't leave me, don't leave me.
Yeah.
And some of that confidence came from it being my second and knowing that you've got this, it's fine. And they wanted to keep me in because she was slightly jaundiced. They said, as long as you're okay with the midwife coming tomorrow. And I said, yeah, that's okay. They did discharge us. And yeah, coming home with Mills was a completely different ballgame. It was knowing what to do, and Reg had met her at the hospital, but then he was like, oh, the baby came home, you know, and he wasn't yet two. There's less than 2 years between them. And he was great. He wasn't that interested, but he was more than happy for her to be around. Like he wasn't jealous of her. Yeah, he was a bloody legend. Mm. Yeah. And then my parents arrived again pretty early on after that. So I think Millie was only 5 days. She wasn't Millie then. It took us about 10 days to name her. And it was like, I just remember my mum looking at me shocked. She was remembering how I was after Reggie's birth, which was obviously major surgery, unsure of myself, to, you know, vaginal birth and realizing that I could do this. But Mum would come over at like 8 a.m. every morning and look after Reg while I fed Mills or had another sleep. So it was just a whole new ball game.
Yes.
Although in saying that, because everything was so much easier, I had so much milk, Millie. And then came with that the guilt of, well, why is this so easy this time? Mm. Why? And is that why I feel so much rage towards Reggie? Because he would do things which were perfectly normal toddler things to do, but because I was sleep deprived and whatever, I would just yell at him and, you know, it was, yeah.
Talk to me a little bit more about that. We were talking beforehand about all those things that no one talks about. Talk to me about the rage. Yeah. Talk to me about the guilt.
So everything felt really easy with Millie, but I would just be constantly pissed off at Reggie. Like, I'd love, he'd come in the morning for a cuddle and we'd have a cuddle. We'd watch like Bananas in Pajamas together and yeah. while I was with Millie. And then we'd get up and then he'd knock his porridge over on the floor and I would yell at him. And then so I'd clean it up whilst muttering under my breath. And then we'd go to the park and then he'd run off. He wanted to go and explore and feel this rage surface of being like, why can't he just stay in one place and do what I want? And he wasn't a naughty kid. He wasn't. He would listen to people and, you know, he was not quite a two-year-old, so he was exploring. But I would just, in my head, I was like, he's so naughty and he never does what I ask and it's really hard and he always is whinging and yelling and blah, blah, blah. And I was trying to do everything myself still. So even like when Mum was here, I'd still be like, nope, I'm making tea. I'll do this. I'll do the cleaning. Yes. I'll do whatever. Because God forbid I showed any sign of weakness.
Yeah.
Having a newborn and a not quite 2-year-old.
Yes.
Sounds so ridiculous. So I would be like, that's fine. I can do it. And I was just getting more and more exhausted and wasn't addressing the situation. It wasn't until Millie was about 6 months that I started saying to Brendan, this isn't okay. I shouldn't be reacting like this. These reactions aren't good. It was putting strain on me and Brendan as well, because then Reggie, obviously, but he's always been a dad's boy and Brendan is such a fun dad. So he would never want me. He would always want Brendan. And although I understood it, there was a huge amount of guilt. So Reggie was probably, he was over 2.5, where I find it. And Brendan was like, you'll be okay. Go out for a walk, you know. You know, just take the evening off. Just relax. Go out with your friends. And then when Reggie was, between 2.5 and 3, I just was like, nah, this isn't okay. It's not okay to have these feelings towards a 2-year-old. And the pressure on our relationships. And I'm really fearful of how mine and Reggie's relationship is going to progress. Mine and my dad's relationship isn't great because he's quite strict. He was the one that I always remember yelling at us. And I don't have a great relationship with my dad. And I live in fear, still do, that that will be the relationship that me and Reggie have. I don't think it will be. I don't think it will be mostly because I finally said no. I don't just need to go for a walk. I don't just need a night out with friends. I need to talk to somebody about this.
Yeah.
And I did. I went and I got recommended to a counsellor who specialises in stress management, because I was like, I'm not stressed. What do I have to be stressed about? I'm not working. You know, I'm not under financial stress. I've got a healthy family. What do I have to be about stress? Motherhood is stressful.
And so stressful.
It's stressful. And I went to see counsellor and he was brilliant. And after my first session, I came home and looked at Reggie and just ran up to him, burst into tears and just gave him a cuddle. That's not to say I cuddle my children all the time, but there was just this release of what I had been doing was putting such high expectations on myself as a mother, as a wife, as a friend, as everything. And I was putting expectations on Reggie as well. I was expecting him to not be behaving like a 2-year-old. I was expecting him to not throw his porridge on the floor and not go off and, you know, and say please and thank you all the time. And it took somebody externally to be like, that's not the way of the world, that you haven't failed if your child doesn't say thank you to a stranger. And it's okay to feel cross as long as that's not your overwhelming emotion all the time. It's okay to feel cross sometimes. It's okay to feel rage sometimes, as long as it's not your overarching emotion and as long as you can manage it, as long as you can go off and take deep breaths, go outside. I walk around the garden now. If something really gets my go, I'll go outside, I'll do 5 laps of my fairly small garden, take some deep breaths and come back inside. It doesn't always work. Sometimes I snap before I go out into the garden. sometimes I will still yell and then have to go, okay, I shouldn't have yelled like that. And Reggie's now four. And sometimes I say, I shouldn't have yelled like that. This is why I yelled.
Yes.
And I shouldn't have done that. And I love you very much. And are you okay?
I think that's such important modeling as well, because like there's absolutely space for all the feelings. And we only talk about motherhood as being this, like, you're going to feel blissed out. And like, you know, there's this one emotion that we're told that we need to regulate the whole time. But the reality is that there's a gajillion emotions. We're only human. We're not robots. And yeah. If we can model that, you know, regulation to our children, that's such a gift, I think.
Yeah, it's so good for children to see that range of emotions. And even if with parents, so, you know, if you have a disagreement with your partner and your children see that you're getting a bit cross with each other or you're having, you know, slightly cross words, it doesn't matter that they see that, as long as they see the outcomes of you guys making up. You know, one of you saying to the other one, I'm sorry about that, or not even apologizing, but just saying, this is why I felt like this. And how are you feeling now? And let's talk about it. So, you know, and if they see that reconciliation and how you manage those emotions, it helps them. I mean, Reg, bless him, the other day he came home from daycare and he said something happened at daycare, but I asked him why he was feeling cross. And then I said he could always come and talk to something along those lines. And I was just like slightly, to begin with, I started feeling a bit sad. And then I was like, that's bloody amazing.
It's so amazing.
Yeah. Felt a bit smug about that afterwards. I was like,
nailed it.
Oh. And that kind of putting mothers on pedestals. I mean, mothers are fucking awesome, don't get me wrong.
Yes.
But putting them up on pedestals. So my mum is a Wonder Woman. She's amazing. She's an amazing mother. She's an amazing grandmother. She's brilliant. But I had her up on a pedestal, and that's what I was trying to emulate. And although we're very similar in a lot of ways, we are completely different people.
Yes.
I want to emulate my mum, but at the same time, she would be the first one to say that she wasn't perfect. You know, she had her moments with the children, but I had her on a pedestal that I was like, well, that's the perfect image of motherhood, and that's what I want to be. I want to be the one that, you know, cooks with my children all the time and, you know, makes up these amazing games with my children all the time. And I'm not that mother. Like, me and my kids just want to go to the park all day, every day. So we just want to go outside.
Yes. You touched on before how tricky it can be to ask for help. What does asking for help look like now?
Well, my first point of call is my husband. So I've learned how to ask him for help, because even that was really tricky.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's not in my first point of call when I'm feeling overwhelmed or stressed or whatever. Sometimes he's not the person I want to talk to. And I have a few very close friends who I'm fortunate enough that I don't have to have a filter and I don't have to put on a facade to them, and I can just be who I am. I can ugly cry if I need to.
Yeah.
And I'm also really lucky that I've come to realize that when people offer to look after my children, sometimes it's because they want to, they don't feel obliged to. So I used to always say, no, you don't have to. It's fine. You don't have to. But sometimes if you've got, especially 2 4-year-olds, it's great because they entertain each other.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I've learned to say yes to those kind of instances, or even like say, hey, I've got such and such on. Is there any chance you can just take the kids for a couple of hours or whatever? And I've got those people who I now feel I can say that to.
Yes. If you could go back and tell yourself anything, what would you say?
Ask for help.
Yeah.
100%. And don't feel bad or ashamed about having to ask for help. And it doesn't matter if help is, can you just come around and hold the baby? Or if it's, can you bring me food? Or if it's, can you come around because I just want to cry at somebody?
Yes.
Yeah. And whatever is your birth and mothering journey story, it's yours for the making. And not to feel influenced and under pressure from what other people are doing. I compared myself, and that's one thing I've got a lot better at, is not comparing myself to other people. Everybody is different and everybody's going to do things differently, but definitely just ask for help. And it's amazing. And it feels so good once you actually ask.
It feels so freaking good. Giving and receiving help, it just feels, yeah, it's such a gift both ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, Katrina, it has been such a delight chatting with you. Thank you so much for sharing your story and speaking so openly and honestly. It's just magic to listen to your journey so far.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for getting back to me as well, because the main reason I wanted to was because I just felt like if it helps one person go, oh, it's okay to feel like that, then yes.
It is such a joy to share these stories with you each week. If you're enjoying the show, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, or share it with someone in your very own kin. You can see all of the gorgeous images of the families that join me each week and get the latest news from Kin on Instagram @KinByCharlotte. I can't wait to chat with you next week.